Hello and welcome to today's broadcast. Hope you're having a fantastic day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing. Unless, of course, you're engaged in jihad in that particular instance. Not so much. You're doing a bad thing and good people are going to get hurt. So don't have a good day. Only means bad things for other people. All right, ladies and gentlemen, trying to get back involved. Today is usually broadcast day over at BTR, and unfortunately I had a series of technical glitches that made it impossible. Part of it was simply my fault, part of it was not, but it made it impossible for me to do the entire broadcast over there. So what I wanted to do essentially was complete the broadcast here, because I was literally in mid-sentence when I got cut off and no longer could continue. So here I am. Here in the wonderful world of Spreaker, and we're prepared to go ahead and continue the thought process where I was at. But I know that some of you will not go over to BTR and listen in to the first part of the show. So I'm going to do a quick recap of what we've covered earlier, and then I'm going to go on to where I was at when I got cut off, so that the folks who were listening at BTR, and for the folks that want to hear the conclusion of the thought process, we'll have that opportunity as well. They can either come here or go forward. Of course, this show is available the same as the other at iTunes, Stitcher.com, TuneIn.com, in several other places I can't think of right off the top of my head. But at any rate, I want to definitely get into it. Now, first and foremost, at the very top of the show, I gave a brief essentially eulogy, I guess, but not so much. the thought process behind the fact that I'm genuinely saddened by the loss of Fred Thompson. Thompson was a United States Senator for the state of Tennessee. He is well known as an actor. He was a litigator before he got into politics. He's a man who came up from humble beginnings, and he made his way to where he is, where he was, by virtue of standing on principle, keeping his promises, and doing what he always thought was in the best interest of everyone, as opposed to just his own personal interests. He was a role model for what the conservative message should be as it's projected and shared. He was an individual that I, in fact, had the opportunity to have in-depth conversations with while he was serving as a senator here for my home state. And every time I came away from one of those conversations, I came away thinking that this man is exactly what has been missing in Washington, D.C. On a personal note, he was the very first person to tell me that I should be involved in talk radio. It's not the primary reason I'm here broadcasting today, but was a factor. Because what he told me at that point was his rationale, his belief that I should be, was because I was always asking the right questions. And when it comes to politics, asking the right questions sometimes is the hardest and the trickiest part. It's something that we all need to be doing when it comes to holding our elected officials accountable to us. And I finished up simply by saying that the world lost one of its brightest shining lights with the passing of Fred Thompson about a week ago today. Because he was everything that, for the past week, we've heard everyone say that he was. He was a great litigator. He was a great statesman. He was a very shrewd politician. He utilized his southern wit and his southern charm to maximum levels, allowing him to operate with a room to be underestimated and then still be able to make his point with people who would never have willingly agreed with him in a million years. I, for one, miss him terribly. And although we weren't close personal friends by any means, in fact, I doubt that if he would even remember me at this point, it had been so long since we'd had one of these conversations. But Tennessee and Hollywood didn't just lose one of their stars, one of their favorite sons. America didn't just lose a statesman, but the whole world lost a truly great man. At that point, I then started talking directly about the paradox, the logic paradox, when it comes to the self-identifying liberals and how they look at the Keystone XL pipeline. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time going back over that, but the bottom line is this. There is a lot of hypocrisy involved here, and the questions that liberals really need to be asked about this, especially the ones that were this past Friday celebrating and just going absolutely crazy, "Yay! Obama stopped the Keystone pipeline! Yay!" Those people need to really be asking, why are you cheering? You need to ask them, why are they cheering? Someone please explain to me, because it's this point that it's pretty obvious they don't know what actually happened when Barack Hussein, Alu Akbar Obama, did not approve the Keystone Pipeline extension. They know very little about the tar sands oil incident, obviously. But for those of you who are listening and don't know much about it, I will be happy to recap right here and let you know why this is a big deal and a tragedy for the left that it didn't get approved. First and foremost, the tar sands is the result of a natural disaster in which there was an underground oil reserve that managed to bubble its way to the top. An ecological disaster, if you will. And the efforts of individuals to clean up this naturally occurring oil spill is to collect the oil and the sands that are in question, to clean the sand and return the clean sand to the area that it needs to be. So this is an ongoing effort for an environmental cleanup. This is going on in Canada. So, point number one, nothing is going to change as far as oil being taken from the tar sands. Point number two, nothing is going to change as far as how it is being moved. Because right now, it's being loaded on trains, and it's being moved about to wherever it's being refined. Some of which is within the United States, just FYI. So it's being transported either via train or via tanker truck. Now, Mr. and Mrs. Environmentalist, who was celebrating the shutdown of the project as a potential means of moving the oil to specialized refineries in the United States, did you actually do anything to protect the environment in this effort? The quick answer is no. I'm sure you've been convinced that it is. I'm sure that the message you have gotten is that this was what's best for the environment. But, excuse me, again, in a quick recap of what we discussed in today's earlier broadcast that I didn't get to complete. Bottom line is, pipeline is safer. Pipeline, oh no, there's a leak. Guess what? You can shut it off before very much has leaked. Small amounts. Maybe even so small as to not even actually need a cleanup, although a response team can and will be sent, I promise you. The impact to the environment would be minimal. But now let's take a look at how it's going to be transported now. Primarily by train, right? Nothing ever happens to trains. They're never derailed. What happens when a train carrying oil or other petroleum products derails? Well, almost without fail, there's rupture of the car, so there's spillage at the very least. A lot of spillage, hundreds of gallons worth of spillage, affecting the environment, getting into the water table, killing plants and animals, possibly killing people, although I know for the environmentalists, the effect of humans is much less of a concern, if a concern at all. After all, hey, there's just way too many of us, right? We are what's killing the planet, after all. Jeesh. And, let's take it to worst possible scenario. Guess what? Fire. There's explosions. There's burning. There's chemicals being released into the air, again, further polluting and poisoning our poor, sad world. Now, granted, it's not very likely that trains are going to derail when you look at how many trains are operating every day, and there are professionals, they're handling their business, but you see, the flip side of that coin is the fact that the majority of train derailments, most people never hear about unless it happens in their own backyard. It's not something that's typically reported as national news, mostly because it's common enough that it's not a big news story, unless there's some crazy, scary chemical that's involved. And just FYI, oil would not fall into that category for most news agencies. Now, let's say that instead of on the train, it's on a truck instead. Well, okay, that's okay. It's on a truck. We certainly never see semi-rigs having accidents on our interstate highways, do we? The odds of a big rig being involved in an accident carrying oil are the same as any other vehicle on our highways. The odds of one of these trucks, again, being damaged enough that there's leakage, or worse, well, it's better than 70% if it's actually involved in an accident of any kind. So, when you look at the total number of trucks required to move the amount of oil we're talking about, then you're almost guaranteed to have more spillage and more environmental impact. Having them run on these diesel trucks. By the way, diesel is one of those big pollutants. You're adding those fluorocarbons to the atmosphere, just delivering them that way. There's no use of diesel fuel in using the pipeline. So even if there's never an accident, you've already worsened the environment by using the trucks. And now that I think about it, aren't most train engines run on diesel these days? Pretty sure that's the case. So even without... It's what you're telling me, that even without the possibility of an accident, that you're already still having a much larger negative impact on the environment by using the diesel fuel involved with moving it via train or truck than you would have with the pipeline? Yes, that is what I'm telling you. And it's the truth. But you know, don't ever let anything like the truth get in the way of telling a great narrative. Like Barbara Boxer, who was out there telling everybody how this is some of the dirtiest oil known to mankind. Again, because of how it's being picked up. She's leaving out the fact that, guys were actually cleaning up the sand, and in the effort, were able to separate the oil, and since we took the time to separate it, we might as well refine it and use it. All the denials. Bernie Sanders had his comment about how it's crazy to defend the pipeline. See, obviously, these Democrats and socialists, they haven't figured out that, guess what? more oil in the United States, which is where it would be coming to get refined, and we could manage to get that onto our own markets a lot cheaper, in turn reducing the actual cost of energy here in the United States, which would be good for the people. They're not about to do that. But what they need to realize is more oil in the United States means more oil that they can charge taxes on. They'd be on board then. They'd be all about it. Because they're not doing anything to help the environment, you environmentalists. Those of you who think you just scored some major victory, sorry, you did not. What you did manage to do is have these politicians who already think you're nothing more than useful idiots get to play you as a chump. That's where you're at. And just as one final parting thought, why would they play you as a chump if they know that the environmental impact is actually going to be worse continuing to transport the oil the way it's going to be done now than what it would be if they used the pipeline? Why would they want to sell you on this issue? Well, for the very same reason that most politicians, unfortunately, do anything and everything they do. There's something in it for them. And 9 times out of 10, that something is money. Barbara Boxer was out big. Let's take a look at her stock portfolio, shall we? I think she has significant holdings in certain train companies that tend to do a lot of oil transport. And, you know, while we're at it, why would Obama be so anxious to cut this off? Well, Barack Hussein, Allahu Akbar, Obama, he's beholding in large part to a gentleman by the name of George Soros, who, just FYI, has made a huge amount of money. We're talking millions and millions a year in handling transport of oil via train. So, that's just something for you to think about. Some of that use your brain time. And then, continuing the recap from the first part of the show that you guys didn't get to hear, started to discuss Paul Ryan being the new Speaker of the House and what his agenda was, his startup agenda. But before I got into it, I actually got sidetracked because I was talking about this awesome little video that's been released for activists for the illegal community trying to address the racism and using terms like anchor baby and illegal. Trying to make the point that anchor baby is offensive. So they try to get your attention by being just as offensive as they find those terms. That they're actually code for other terms like wetback and beaner. No. Illegal is code for someone who came here without regard to the laws of this country. Someone who did not immigrate here, but legally broke into this country. That's what illegal, alien, not immigrant, illegal, immigrant, actually is an oxymoron. Because immigration is a legal process. You can't illegally do a legal process. Oh, we've had that discussion before, I know, but I'd like to point it out. But here's the other thing. Illegal is not a race. Therefore, if I use the term illegal, I may be bigoted in some fashion, but I'm certainly not racist. Because as far as the people that ignore our immigration laws into this country, there's a reason why the term other than Mexican exists. Because there's a lot of non-Mexicans and even a surprising number of non-Hispanics that are crossing our southern and northern borders illegally. Illegally. So the bottom line is, it's not racist to use the term illegal. And it's also not racist to use an accurate description like Anchor Baby, because, like it or not, it is an accurate description of what certain children who have been granted birthright citizenship, and we've had that discussion as far as whether that's constitutional or not before. It's not, by the way, and that's not a matter of interpretation. It's a matter of just actually reading the Constitution. A lot of the people that argue for birthright citizenship have no idea that it's actually based more on case law after the fact than any constitutional scholar has ever said has anything to do with the Constitution. But that's just one of those little FYI things that most Americans, you're not supposed to know about. But, you know, the great thing is with the internet, you guys can pull this stuff up for yourselves. You don't have to count on me or anyone else to tell you the truth of this one. This is something you can go research and figure out for yourself, but I digress. These folks thought it would be really cute to have a bunch of anchor babies, a bunch of little kids, cuss out Donald Trump. With the idea that they're going to make their point by getting your attention by being as offensive as they find those words. They thought it was very clever. Personally, I think they need to be charged with crimes of reckless endangerment and criminal exploitation of children. Excuse me. And any other legitimate charge you can come up with, you need to stick on these people. They belong in jail for releasing this crap. It's bad for the kids. It's bad for America. And it doesn't make your point that these terms are racist. Because, first of all, it's not. And it's not code. Anchor Baby is not code for Beaner. Anchor Baby is code for flimsy excuse to let people who came here illegally stay. That's what it's code for. In the meanwhile, it needs to be brought to an end. And the people who have taken the time to come here the right way, who came here legally, they deserve to be here because they reverend the opportunity of what America is, what America stands for, what America represents in the world. And it's not all this stuff that the so-called progressives would have you believe. It's actually some pretty cool stuff. It's some good stuff. It's some great stuff. You know, stuff like personal liberty. Stuff like freedom. Stuff like wealth. Yeah, I know. They're all just a bunch of greedy bastards, right? Just as greedy as the rest of us who are over here trying to make a profit by running a company or, you know, anything like that. Ooh, heaven forbid. But ask yourself the question. Bring yourself to the point. Why would it be okay to be offensive when you're trying to make an argument against being offended? And again, liberal logic paradox. Alright, and then here's the point that I was going to get to that I wasn't able to earlier. For those of you who missed the first part, please, there is a link in the show description to follow, and you can listen to the first part of the broadcast as it was put up. Please check it out, follow it, follow the show page there as well. Definitely have opportunities there to for you to hear a lot of stuff that you just don't hear listening to the show over here. But at any rate, please check it out. If you're not going to, fine. You know, you're going to do what you're going to do. The people that listen to these different platforms are crazy loyal to their one platform, and they don't like crossing up platforms, and I don't understand. There's pros and cons involved with every different platform. This one right here is one of the better ones. It's a great one. I love broadcasting here. The flexibility is astounding, but that's not the point. There's a way of monetizing the show more readily available at the other format that I most commonly use. And that's kind of the effort, is to try and obtain better position, a little more monetizing, so I can improve the quality of the show and add new features and all those great things that make the show a lot better. Hard to do given my time and budget right now. So with that being said, let me continue. Paul Ryan. Okay, I'd already discussed, recapping the other show, Paul Ryan's rise to the speakership, if you would call it that. But now I was going to get a little miffed. See, I had a certain amount of respect for Paul Ryan back in the day. I lost that respect when he started in the budget proposals he was offering, started cutting off our veterans. He started taking money away from veterans programs just to add it to programs that were essentially welfare type programs for illegal aliens in the country. Now, when it comes right down to it, there is one group of people that our government should absolutely, positively, in no way ever cut short, take shortcuts, not honor the promises made to, and that's our veterans, ladies and gentlemen. We're actually coming up on Veterans Day, November 11th. Coming up this week, a day that we set aside to honor, respect, and remember the sacrifices made by our veterans. We should never forget. And that's not just an American idea. If you're in Canada, you're military veterans, you should honor and respect their sacrifices for what they've done for your country. If you're in England, anywhere in the UK for that matter, if you're in France, it doesn't matter where you're at. If you're in Germany, thankfully, this show, I still get the biggest plays right here in the States, but it's truly worldwide. There are people listening to this show in Japan, in Israel, Germany, and several other places I can't think of right off the top of my head. It's been too long since I've looked at my stats, I'm afraid. But this is truly an international show. So part of what we're missing is a certain pride, a certain level of nationalism. And we need to remember that every one of our countries has something to be proud of. And our veterans have fought for those things. Our veterans have fought for us, to defend us, to keep us safe in all of these countries. But here in the United States, when Paul Ryan started introducing budgets that would cut short benefits for our veterans in order to have money to give away to people who were not here legally in the first place, he lost my respect. So I was not at all happy, in case you're new to the show or haven't heard me in a while. I was not at all happy with Paul Ryan becoming the speaker. But it was absolutely mind-boggling to me what he decided was the highest priority. And you can tell what's the highest priority based on what do you go and do first. What did Paul Ryan decide the House of Representatives should tackle first, the first order of business, the first item they should get on board with? The highway bill. The highway bill. Now, do we need to get our highways fixed? Yeah. The infrastructure is in a state of disrepair in many places. But is this really the highest priority? This is the most important thing facing the American people? The most important thing that Paul Ryan can be leading the charge on? Let's spend some money and fix some highways. Translation, let's approve a bunch of spending, most of which is going to get wasted while part of it actually goes to what it's intended to do, and the highways continue to remain in a perpetual state of need of repair. That's what he chose to work on first. We have Hillary Clinton that is still apparently on a fast track to the White House right now, based on the fact that somehow or another, once again, despite some of the most smug and most ridiculous responses during the Benghazi hearing, she comes out Teflon, nonstick. Nothing's going to get hung on me. And now there's even talk about how the intelligence agencies are claiming that her emails were not classified or branded as top secret now. What? We found how many previously that clearly were, but now we're being told, oh, well, sorry, are bad. No. It can't be true. Something else is happening there. There is no way so many people were so certain about what they saw, and then all of a sudden, now, by edict from on high, that's just not the case. You've got to be kidding me. So Paul Ryan decides it's going to be the highway bill. That's the first order of business. Okay, well, let's for a second give him the benefit of the doubt. Now, any smart guy wants to be a good leader, knows that you have to set team goals that are achievable. So, fully benefit of the doubt here, let's say for a second that, okay, this is how I'm going to establish my speakership style. And I'm going to start out with a track record that's going to build some goodwill, both with the Republicans who normally would stand against something that the Democrats would be okay with, and with Democrats, because generally speaking, if it involves spending money that they can go back to their constituents and say, hey, look what I did for you, now vote for me again, then they'll be on board. So maybe this is a politics as usual move, where it's not necessarily his highest priority, but he's thinking in terms of establishing himself as somebody who can get something done, building a little more political capital, and building a little bit of a coalition so that he can move more important stuff later. Now, is that what's actually happening? I don't know, but I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt on that. But if that is the case, then he needs to move quickly 1, 2, 3 more bills along those same lines that he can actually build some relationships across party lines so he can move some real legislation shortly thereafter. Because there are some important things going on that the House needs to get involved with, including, once and for all, taking control of the purse strings the way the Constitution set up our government to do in the first place. I'm going to take a real quick break. And in the meanwhile, we're going to talk a little bit about the weight of the world, because that's what Paul Ryan has on his shoulders right now. Now, we're not going to talk about that, but that is the title of the song. Stay with me. I'll be right back.
Into the truth. Check us out at tapintothetruth.com for our latest blog post and for links to all of our past broadcasts. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. That's Tap Into the Truth, right here on Spreaker.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back, and that last song there is She Lies, and I like to play that as long as Hillary Clinton is in the news, which, you know, during the presidential campaign, that's a lot. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show today. In case I haven't mentioned it to you before, I'm very happy to have you listening. This is a part two broadcast that actually started on a different platform, had some technical issues, part of which was my fault, part of which was not, but it kept me from getting the entire broadcast out. So there was a couple of things that were important enough that I wanted to finish. There was a link for those of you that are listening on this platform that you can follow, a link in the show description to hear the first part. But I did basically a recap for those of you who would not be. If you wanted to hear the rest of what I had to say, please go back and listen. If the recap was enough for you and you're tired of that, well, then I'm surprised you're still listening at this point. But thank you just the same. I really do appreciate the listeners. I appreciate everybody who takes the time to listen in. The broadcast actually, right now I'm averaging right about 1 million listens a week. Now, that's still small potatoes compared to a lot of podcasts that are out there, so I'm certainly not bragging, but by the time I look at what gets played at the other, easy for me to say, the other platform that I primarily use to broadcast at, what gets played here, what gets played throughout the other outlets like iTunes, Stitcher.com, TuneIn.com, podcast.com, a bunch of the other places where I'm currently syndicated to. By the time all those get tabulated and added together, including older episodes and newer episodes, it's about 1 million plays a week, and it's been there consistently now for several months. So thank all you guys who listen, and thank you very much for sharing the show. There's no way that many people are listening without it being shared. And it's difficult to kind of keep track of where everybody and everything's getting done. So just blanket thank you. No matter where you're listening to this show from, no matter how you're listening to it, whether it's over an app on your phone, or if you're listening by your computer, or if you're in your car and you've got internet radio in your car, wherever you're listening from. Even if you disagree with me with 99% of what I say, and you're only listening to hear what crazy thing I'm going to say next, thanks for listening. I just can't say it enough, because I can't adequately express to you how much I really appreciate the fact that you are. In the meanwhile, going to continue. Was talking about Paul Ryan before the break and his apparent highest priority, what his agenda was. Okay, and I played off a best-case scenario, giving him the benefit of the doubt. And I'd really like to do that. Like I said, I lost a lot of respect for Paul Ryan when he started trying to cut our veterans in some of the budget proposals he offered. I lost a lot of that respect, not just because of the fact that he was cutting the veterans, but also what he was trying to do with the money that he took from the veterans. He was trying to give it away to people who should not even be in the country, because they didn't come here legally. So I have my concerns, and maybe I'm still just being a little too Pollyanna in trying to give the benefit of the doubt, but I find myself still doing that. Because I'm constantly faced with this idea in the back of my head, and somebody else must be thinking the same thing, because I saw it in a meme this past week, and I thought that is probably the best meme. I'm thinking about introducing a new segment to the show, by the way, Meme of the Week, because it seems like every week there's some really great ones that come out that are worth being noteworthy. But this particular one, Ming said something that I've been thinking for a long time. It concerns me. It scares me. But it showed, if you're familiar with the Andy Griffith Show, showed Don Knotts as Barney Fife and Andy Griffith as Andy Taylor. And Andy was whispering to Barney, "What if there's no conspiracy? What if everyone in our government really is that stupid?" Kind of scary, isn't it? I don't know which thought would be scarier, quite honestly. It's not like it's... scary stuff, period. End of discussion. And that's about as scary as it gets. But anyway, when I'm thinking in terms of things that the American people need to, I'm thinking right now, first and foremost, what he should have tackled at the very beginning is Obamacare. Never mind the fact that the Republicans promised to deal with Obamacare, to defund it, to repeal it, to replace it. Not a fan of the replacement idea, in my opinion. And of course, it is just that. It's an opinion. Take it for what it's worth. You know, and just understand, it's just an opinion. But in my opinion, we would be far better off, healthcare-wise, affordability-wise, if we let free market forces work. Now, the free market is all but gone completely within the United States at this point. Make no mistake about it. We've had a socialist Marxist regime in power for over 7 years now. And it has decimated the very concept of true free market economy. You know, we've had administrations in the past that have interfered with the free markets to the point that you can't really say that we've had a true free market economy for a very long time. And I don't want to bore you if you're not into economics. And if you are into economics, you probably already know everything that I'm saying. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time going down details or hampering or even whining about it. But the bottom line is, true free market's gone. But you want to talk about affordability of healthcare. There are certain things that can be done that the government can just get out of the way that would drive prices down. First and foremost, if you want to look at just the expense of insurance, yeah, and I know you've all heard these before, let's change the portability, let's lower the barriers that stand in the way in the competition in multiple states so that these companies can actually fight over those dollars with one another. That kind of competition drives prices down. Well, let's apply some common sense to the idea that we do not need to go to the doctor every time we get a hangnail. So we do not need to be paying for policies that will cover everything from major catastrophic all the way down to the hangnail. We just don't need it. We need to be able to pick and choose what coverages we want, and we need to be able to go back to doing what we were doing before. Now, insurance wasn't affordable and available for all citizens of this country. I understand that. But if you want to fix it, you have to affect how insurance is going to be operating the business side. Right now, we're facing the very real possibility of a lot of people who manage to get themselves covered, possibly for the first time, the first year or two of Obamacare. And now they're seeing why so many of us had called it from the very beginning the Unaffordable Health Care Act. Or even more poignantly, the Unaffordable We Don't Care Act. Because the people who passed this didn't give a rat's backside about your health care. If they did, they wouldn't have started with insurance. They would have started with ways to try and make it cheaper to provide medical services. Insurance, just getting insured, doesn't affect the availability of health care in an area, and it doesn't affect the expense of providing health services. It doesn't. To start with a rule that requires you to have insurance, and then not put any kind of safeguards in place as far as what an insurance company can actually charge you for these policies, is the first step that they didn't care. This is an intermediary step. It was a go-between. They want a single-payer system. They want completely, totally socialized medicine. So here's the plan. They throw in this half-baked idea, get enough people involved that it looks like it might almost be viable, and then they let the insurance companies do what they have to do in order to maintain some level of profitability while operating within the guidelines of this law. That works twofold. They know, number one, the insurance companies are going to have to continue to raise rates just to try and maintain any type of profit margin. Most insurance companies that were involved with the Obamacare exchanges have already given up the concept of a profit margin and are just trying to find a profit at all. Most of the nonprofits are dropping out at the end of this year. They've lost billions of dollars because you have people trying to provide services and trying to pay for services that have no idea what the cost of these services should be, so they're willing to pay whatever. And in the process, they lose a ton of money. They're not getting enough folks in. They were servicing the poorest part of the Obamacare constituency. So these are the people that can afford the least to move to one of the other companies who are charging 70 to 80% more for roughly the same type of coverage. Why? Because these are people that have been in the business for a while already, and they know that it's expensive when you're actually going to be paying for all these different services. So here you are. This year, it varies from state to state, but the most common number I've seen in most states, the average bump up from last year's to this coming year's policies is about 35%. A 35 to 36% increase in your insurance premium. The one that you are required by law to have, or pay a penalty. Well, if they're really that concerned about your health, why give you the opt-out option of paying a penalty in the first place? I mean, that should have been your first clue. They're not interested. Well, actually, it should have been about your third or fourth clue. Like I said, their very first clue is they're going to mandate that you have to have insurance, but they're not going to put any kind of underlying rules as to how much an insurance company can charge you. That should have been your very first clue that this was never about your well-being. This was about getting what they want. What they want in this instance is socialized medicine. They want a single-payer system. They want you to want it too. They knew it was just a matter of time before the insurance companies would have to raise the rates to a point that most people couldn't afford it. So then they're trapped in this rock and a hard place. The people who couldn't get insurance before, now, 2-3 years down the road, can't get insurance now either. Only now, what makes it worse is the people who could get insurance, who were happy with their insurance, who were happy with their doctors before Obamacare came along, had those policies disappear, not even available. They had to pick something else that didn't provide the same level of coverage and did cost more money in order to maintain a semblance of following the law and still trying to provide the insurance protection that they feel like their family needs and deserves. Many of those people are not going to be able to afford to continue under the new guidelines, because if you're one of the fortunate people that gets a advanced tax credit, a subsidy as it's being referred to in the general terminology, if you're getting a subsidy to help pay for your monthly benefits, the expectation is that that's not likely to change. So the cost of your policy is going up 36%, and you're still getting the same level of subsidy. then it's still conceivable that the amount of money that you're paying out of your pocket, if you keep the same policy, could more than double. So, as far as you're concerned, it doesn't matter that it was only 36%. It's 100% to you because you're paying twice what you had to pay before if you can't afford it. And let's face facts, folks. A lot of the people that made the effort to try and comply with this law faced the very fact that they could not afford to continue with an increase. So many people are going to be faced with the decision now to just forget about insurance, pay the penalty, take less insurance at some point. And I don't even know if a policy is going to exist in this year. I haven't done enough research yet. I haven't looked at the exchanges yet. I don't know if a policy is going to exist this coming year that it would actually be cheaper to have that policy. It would have to be one of the worst ones down in the bronze level. Be cheaper to have that policy than to just pay the penalty at the end. But if that's what you come to, what has been fixed in healthcare? Your availability is not any different. You're having to pay a penalty, and you're still having to pay all your healthcare expenses out of pocket. Where was it fixed? It wasn't. But here's what they wanted. They wanted this to happen, and make no mistake about it, because they knew the insurance companies would have to raise rates, right? They knew eventually it would become completely unaffordable. One thing they probably didn't know is how much it would actually cost them to pay their taxes on their Cadillac plans. That's why Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid actually this past week were trying to introduce an amendment bill to Obamacare to lower the taxes on the Cadillac plans. Actually, they wanted to get rid of them. So we'll see how that plays out. But how's that for hypocrisy? Multimillionaires who happen to be lawmakers going to write themselves a new little niche so that they don't have to pay their fair share, because that's what all taxes are, right? Our fair share. That's what we keep getting told. It's unpatriotic not to pay our taxes, right? See, they can afford insurance at any rate. And plus, most of their insurance is already covered through the government anyway. So, yes, ladies and gentlemen, if you are an American citizen and you are a taxpayer, you're paying for theirs anyway, but they still would be responsible for their Cadillac policy charge. They're trying to find a way to get out of paying that. So, congratulations. But they wanted the system to collapse. They wanted it to be completely unaffordable. They wanted you, the average everyday citizen, to be pulling your hair out, trying to figure out how you're going to insure your family, how are you going to get access to the health care that you need, that you cannot afford, because they wanted you to cry out to the government and say, you screwed this up, now you fix it. But you see, best of all, they don't even have to take the heat. They don't have to take the negative side of it from the majority of the American citizens, because they paint this up as being, well, it's the insurance companies raising the rates. It's the insurance companies that are the bad guys. They're the ones. They're evil, profiteering ways. And while somewhere around 46 to 47% of the American public are going to be too smart for that, and they're going to know right off the bat, you broke this, you need to fix it. Unfortunately, another 47 to 48% of the American public are going to take a big old swig of that Kool-Aid, buy into everything that they're being told by these politicians that are stringing them along from the beginning, and they're going to actually think this is the insurance company's fault. They will place blame on the insurance company, and they will buy in a little bit further to the idea that socialized medicine is the solution. That is the answer. You're being played. But Paul Ryan, rather than take on Planned Parenthood or take on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or, of course, that's really more something the Senate should be taking up. But the House could still pass a resolution. Rather than taking on this farce that is Obamacare, anything the least bit controversial, anything that needs the attention because it will actually help the American people. No, too controversial, too hard, not the tone I want to set. It's dividing issues, not a bringing together kind of issue. So he chooses to work on the highway bill first. Ladies and gentlemen, we need true leadership. And as we move ever closer into the election year coming up in 2016, we need to be very mindful of who we vote for, not just for president, but also to the seats in the Senate that are up for grabs, the seats that are in the House that are up for grabs, and the same thing with our state governments at the governorship, at the representative level, at the Senate level, however your state government is divided up, whoever your representatives are, we need to be very careful. And I don't care if they have an R or a D at the end of their name, we need to make sure that these are people that understand the struggles that are faced every day by the average American and who are willing to stand on principles as opposed to interest. Liberal logic paradoxes are on display, but in most cases, there's no paradox at all. There's just hypocrisy. That's pretty easy to find. And you can find out the difference for these people just by asking them a few simple questions. If you were one of these people that were celebrating the Keystone XL pipeline getting rejected, tell me, why are you against the cleanup efforts of the tar sands? Why are you willing to put the environment at greater risk by having it transported by means of diesel? Why are you willing to allow politicians and DC cronies, worldwide cronies like George Soros, to continue to profit billions of dollars a year rather than taking the more environmentally friendly approach of the pipeline? You run into a liberal that was celebrating this, you need to ask them those questions. Find out why they support George Soros raping the environment, but not the Koch brothers. Because guess what? It's the same result. Condemn one, condemn them both. I've silenced a lot of people trying to have arguments with me over this week when I asked them how much they knew about the tar sands, where the oil was coming from, what was actually being done with the oil, why we were going ahead and refining it. Most of these people didn't know. You need to know. Find out. This is the part where you use your brain. Do a little of your research. Let me play for you, just for the heck of it, the old roll-in. This is what we do here. Listen carefully as I play this. Listen to what is said.
Delving past the headlines.
Because the headlines are only sales.
The propaganda and challenging you to use your brain. It's time to determine it to the truth.
That's the old roll-in, and that's exactly the point that I try to make each and every broadcast. You have to delve past the headline to understand what's going on, because the headline is just trying to sell you on something. That's all. The media bias is in every story they tell. The propaganda is in every story they tell. So I challenge you to move past what they're trying to present to you, what they're trying to put in front of you, what they're trying to get you to buy into. Move past that and see for yourself the reality of the circumstance. If you were a true environmentalist, and you wanted what was best for the environment, and you believe that diesel emissions are so terrible, then you got to think that the XL pipeline would have been the best thing possible. Because the lack of extending that pipeline and connecting it up with one that already exists in the U.S. doesn't change the fact that the tar sands is going to continue to be cleaned up, that the oil is going to continue to be collected, and the refinement of that oil is going to continue to happen. All that's going to change is absolutely nothing, because it's going to continue to be transported via train and via truck. That's what's going to happen. And much of that oil is being sent to specialized refineries. A couple of those are within the United States, so it's still going to make its way into the country. So we're not even keeping, as Barbara Boxer put it, that filthiest oil known to man out of the country. It's not staying out of the country. It's still coming in, and it's being refined. But it costs us a lot more to get it here. And by this route, they're having to turn right back around and take it back before they can sell it. Whereas the agreement under the pipeline deal would have allowed a lot of that oil to come far cheaper directly onto the U.S. market. We got screwed. Those of us who want cheaper energy in the United States, we got screwed. Those of you who want a cleaner environment with less diesel emissions, you got screwed. This deal is bad for the environment by getting rejected. It would have been better for the environment had it been passed. And people like Bernie Sanders, who says it's crazy to have supported it. Ordinarily, I would just dismiss that, but come to think of it, Bernie Sanders has been looking in the mirror for a long time. If anybody recognizes crazy, it's probably him. Uncle Joe may be the only one who might be better suited. At any rate, I'm going to have to shut it down at this point. Bounced a little past an hour here, and I really only had about 20 minutes of the broadcast left. Having to do the recap, let's really stretch this out. At any rate, one more time, I want to thank everybody for listening. I certainly appreciate anybody who takes the time out to listen to my ramblings. Please check out the first part of the show, part one, Liberal Logic Paradox, a.k.a. the Keystone XL Pipeline, over at BTR. Like I said, in the show description here, there is a link to that show. I would love it if you would listen to all of it in its entirety, as well as having listened here. Thank you. Have a great upcoming week. And for all of those, all of you out there who happen to be veterans, thank you. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your sacrifice. Thank you for everything you have done to allow me and my family to live and breathe free. Thank you for allowing me to express my freedom of speech by coming on here and broadcasting. That's something that you sacrificed and fought for. I thank you from the bottom of my heart, and I hope and pray that we can get things fixed at the VA. I hope and pray that everyone you meet next week offers you that same show of respect and gratitude, because you earned it. You deserve it. Thank you. And now, for the rest of you, ladies and gentlemen, don't take my word for it. Definitely, definitely don't take their word for it. Take a little time, put in your own effort, do your own research, use your brain. Because the bottom line is you're really going to have to work just a little bit if you really want to tap into the truth. That's it for this week, everybody. We'll be back on BTR next week. And who knows, now that I'm back here on the Spreaker as well, I may broadcast a few through the week over here. Definitely miss doing that. At any rate, thanks again. Have a great upcoming week. Happy Veterans Day, everybody. Going to play Miracle on the way out. That's from our friend Cash Easlow and his friend Stephen Miller, who unfortunately passed away this past year. Playing it because undoubtedly that's what we need right now. I still believe America's best days are ahead of her, but in order for us to turn around all this craziness we got going on right now, we could use a miracle. So here's Miracle, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.
I'm looking for a miracle. Looking for a miracle. Angel looking over me. Just a breath of hope to see. I'm looking for a miracle. Looking for a miracle. Open up the doors for me. Looking for a Jew. Eternity. Oh,